There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along. And check us out online, fmtalk1065.com, plus Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those platforms. And maybe we'll put some links up for what we're fixing to talk about right now. He's back with us. I enjoyed a conversation we had a few months ago with Robert Clem. He's a writer, producer, director, Alabamian. And he is the last time he was in, we were talking about that Alabama Black Belt Blues. You know, we get this idea that the blues were all, you know, just in the Mississippi Delta or the Hill Country or, you know, came out of Chicago. But Alabama's contribution to the blues, it was fascinating. And it was a documentary that was on APT. And at the end of the conversation, Robert Clem and I were talking about a new feature that he was working on. And obviously, it got my attention because it was, well, Civil War history and about a subject we were talking about so much in the city at that point with the removal of the statue of Raphael Sims, that his upcoming presentation was going to be about Raphael Sims and the film Sink the Alabama. Robert Clem joins us again right here on Midday Mobile. Thanks for your time. Good to have you back.
Oh, thanks, Sean. I'm really glad to be back in Mobile. Absolutely.
So, and that is, I mean, that's how much of a, you know, I know there's going to be a bunch of people that claim the historical connection to it, but Mobile was the one that made the statue of Raphael Sims, right? I mean, it is a story that does have a lot of ties to the city of Mobile.
Well, yes, I think the United Daughters of the Confederacy are usually the ones that put up these statues, and I'm sure that was true in 1900, as far as I know. And I think that, to answer your question directly, Raphael was born in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I believe, I understand he was born, Maryland was a divided state. They had free labor in the north, slave labor in the south, and I understand he came from the southern part of Maryland. He then joined the United States Navy, and that made his career. He loved sailing, loved being at sea. He was an abolitionist from Ohio, but at some point, I think he was stationed at Pensacola, so he went down and kind of settled in Mobile. He liked Mobile, and he decided to make it his permanent home. So that really is his connection to Mobile. He from the 1840s, late 1840s, onward until he died in 1875, I think, he was a Mobilian. So that's the connection that Mobile has to the story.
When he showed up here, he had his naval training already, correct? I mean, he was already...
Right. At that time, there was no naval academy. It was you became a midshipman, and you went onto a ship, and you learned the ropes, literally, that way. I think the problem with... He did not like the U.S. Navy because of their very stilted promotion system, by seniority only. And he really was frustrated in the United States Navy. And I think that... when the time came to make a decision whether to join the Confederacy or not, he knew that in the Confederate Navy, he was really going to have a lot more opportunity to get to sea once again, because he really wanted to be at sea. But they had put him in lighthouse duty or the other, and so I think that he was champing at the bit, boy. When they said, go out and take this ship, the Alabama, and start raiding Union commerce, he was definitely ready.
Yeah, so I mean, here's somebody who, you don't know what's in somebody's heart or mind at that point, but mm-hmm. maybe decided to sign and sign on with Confederacy because he saw a better chance for him personally? I mean, more about him personally and advancement than maybe his ideas? I mean, his wife was an abolitionist, right? So,
yeah, that's true. I think that's true. I mean, that's the thing about the Civil War. I mean, and why people chose one side or the other. It had a lot of different. There were a lot of different motivations. I mean, I think that he became a rather strong defender of the Southern cause, speaking in support of slavery, of why the, he didn't think the war was really about slavery from a moral standpoint. He thought it was an economic attack on the South. So he had a law degree. You know, I happen to have one of those too. So I mean, I think he was good at arguing his case, in other words, and defending the fact that he was out there fighting against the Union he had once served. So I think it really gives us a lot of insights into the thinking of people like Sims and how they conceived of the Civil War and what they were fighting for. Because today we define it all about slavery, and true, that was certainly the inciting factor.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, there were a lot of other things going on, too. So my film is not to sort of, like, praise or make a hero out of Sims, but really to try to understand him as a character. And he was a fascinating character. There's no question about that.
I mean, character indeed, right? I mean, people, yeah. Was Rhett Butler, you know, fashioned around the character, fashioned around Sims? I mean, you've seen some, you know.
No, I don't think so. Actually, Sims was a rather aloof person. And as a matter of fact, one of my historians who's from the U.S. Naval Academy, who's fascinated by Sims, he felt that he was a kind of a Byronic figure. I mean, he was a literary man. And he was really—he wasn't like a social creature. He spent most of his time in the ship's cabin on the Alabama, writing in his journals. And I think one of my other scholars, a biographer of Sims, really says that Sims was a writer at heart. He'd written a very well-received book about his experiences in the Mexican War, where he was in the ship, and he's also on land. And he also wrote memoirs of the Civil War, and he spent a lot of time doing that, and I thought that was really ultimately an ambition, I think.
But you combine those two.
Great experience and then to write about it. It's very kind of like Hemingway, you know? Hemingway went to World War One. He went to the Spanish Civil War because he knew there was a lot to write about in those experiences.
Well,
I'm not saying that Sims did that so he could write a book, but I'm saying that that was part of his personality, certainly, was literary ambition.
Well, if I'm getting a sense here, and in Sink the Alabama, you know, I was fascinated last time we finished our interview about the blues documentary, and you and I talked off air at length about this, that this international component to the Alabama and Raphael Sims on the seas fighting a literal war and blockades, and we could talk about that, also a war of opinion, right? Trying to change minds in England.
That's a big part of the story, yes. I have another scholar, Amanda Foreman, who's the foremost authority on the British role in the Civil War. And, yes, the fact is that the British were very anti-slavery. I mean, starting in the 1790s, very rigorous, and they banned it, and the British Navy spent most of their time in the 1840s and 50s intercepting anybody that tried to bring slaves out of Africa. I mean, they were out there on the seas to enforce this. So British were very anti-slavery. Of course, on the other hand, they also needed the Southern cotton. They were very dependent on Southern cotton for their textile mills. And there was also a lot of animosity toward the United States government going way back.
Yeah.
Remember they had a war of 1812?
Yeah.
They burned the White House.
Yep.
And they kept snipping at each other and snapping at each other. So when the South separated from the North, I mean, and there was a lot of sympathy saying, wow, this is pretty, you know, two nations instead of one, and we don't like the Yankees anyway. So there was a lot of that going on. So there was really this whole thing between slavery, anti-slavery opinion, and the whole idea that. But so what happened was that because the Lincoln really was not able to declare slavery the main issue of the war originally for various reasons. He said, "Oh, it's not about slavery; it's about preserving the Union." And so this gave the South a chance to convince the Britons, well, see, it's not about slavery, so, you know, we're just fighting for our freedom, our liberty, against Northern aggression. So a lot of Britons were convinced by that, and for all 4 years of the war, apparently, the British opinion was on the side of the South. But they did declare their neutrality. So they weren't supposed to build ships or provide arms, but they secretly did. And that was where the USS Alabama came out. And, you know, it was secretly built in Britain. Well, not so secretly, but it was openly, it was an open secret. And then it sailed out. Sims was a commander, and it spent 22 months at sea destroying, I don't know, 60 to 70 ships of the Union merchant fleet.
Yeah, and so, I mean, people may not think about that. When the Alabama, so they build that in England, knowing that that's going to the Confederacy, right? I mean, that ship is going to go to the Confederacy while they're claiming that, you know, they're against slavery, but they are giving a very important piece of marine hardware to the Confederacy.
Well, you see, the thing is, it was they made every pretense they did not put any weapons on the ship, and supposedly, and then they falsely claimed it was for another country and this and the other thing. But the thing is, most people knew, kind of winkingly, they knew it was being built for the Confederacy. But the British government was sort of like torn between what to do, and actually, they did finally order that the ship not sail forth. But that that order was, I don't know, and it's a long story, but it never got there in time, and the ship sailed out of Liverpool, and then they went to the Bahamas, and that's where they put on the guns and loaded it up as a warship. You see, so you know there were laws against the ship being built there, but they were kind of like they weren't enforced as much as they could have been, and that's what happened. You know.
Talking to Robert Clem and the upcoming film here, Sink the Alabama. This is going on. We talked England, we talked the Bahamas. You know, people think about Civil War history, and if it's on the naval side, they're thinking about this harbor blocked or a fight against a fort in a given place. This is stuff going on the high seas.
Yes, absolutely. No, he went all the way to South China Sea, sinking ships over there. Then he came to Cape Town, and he spent a lot of Cape Town. The thing is, he was a celebrity all over the world because everybody read about all his exploits. He narrowly escaped from several Union ships when they had him blocked in here and there. You know, and so he became this kind of Robin Hood figure, or maybe John Dillinger, as somebody said. You know, he gets around, and so he's people are there going out in droves to see him at these ports and to get on board the tour of the ship. And newspaper articles and layouts. I mean, this is the thing. This is kind of an early example. Well, I guess it's not really an early example, but celebrity. This is what, if you become famous and you accomplish something as Sims did, that is, sinking ships and not getting caught, and, you know, et cetera, you become a celebrity. I mean, even though you whatever you're fighting for, that becomes lost in the whole story of the fact that you're such an interesting figure.
So the idea of who says you have the title of the film Sink the Alabama? Who says Sink the Alabama? Is it a specific person, or is that just the mission for the Union?
Well, in order to give the film some drama, naturally, I have another major character in the film, the U.S. Navy Secretary Gideon Welles, who happened to have written. His diaries are famous. They were Civil War diaries. He was an insider of the Lincoln cabinet. And so he's the guy who's trying to sink the Alabama, and we have him as a character as well as Sim. So you have really two competing and opposing points of view in the film, which is always my intention in these movies. I'm not going to have one character be predominant. No, we would have to have the give and take between the two sides. And so you have Welles on one side, Sims with his book, which is an excellent book, very well. He was a great writer, terrific writer, and so was Welles in a more limited way. So that kind of that's where that comes from. Yeah.
Let's talk about the film and people now interested. Tell them where to go to watch a trailer. Talk about the when we can see it. All that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, in terms of trailer. Yeah, that's online. I believe it's open to anyone who wants to look at it, and I think you have the link.
Mm-hmm. We'll put that up.
It's still in progress, so you know it's not complete yet. So I'm hoping I'm planning for it to be complete by the end of this year, and I have a lot more work to do on it. I mean, there's a lot of visual material that you have to get. I mean, here is an era when there were no motion picture cameras, so it's all stills and maps. And you got to do a lot of animations and 3Ds and try to keep it interesting from a visual standpoint. I mean, it's certainly a great story, so we just have to find a way to keep it interesting to an audience and make it happen.
So it's you've got the material here. I mean, the life
of the story. I think the story is great. It's almost surprising that it hasn't really been done as a movie up to this point, except for the sheer technical problems of putting it on screen. You know, I think it would be a good feature film, but once again, you've got to build ships of that era, of which there really are none. Because the thing is, at that time, they were transitioning from sail power to steam power. So the Alabama and most of the other ships at the time, they had sails, they were rigged for sails, but they also had a steam engine, and they would use both. And so I really don't think there are very many of those ships anywhere in the world. I mean, I'm not sure. I'd like to know if there are.
But. Well, they can make, with CGI, they can make anything. And the excitement of seeing, something that's on the high seas or off the off the coast of France in a battle from the... I agree. I think a feature film would be...
Yeah.
It would be something to see. But you think this year for the film, Sink the Alabama, it'll be 2021?
Well, I mean, I will have it finished by 2021, but it certainly will not be available anywhere until 2022, I'm pretty sure of that, just because of all the work that still remains to be done. But, I'm very excited about it. I think it's, and the way, it's taken me a while to come up with the structure for the film. But, now I think Wells versus Sims... Then you have a real toe-to-toe battle. It's not just about Sims going around sinking ships. You got to also have the other side looking for him and being frustrated at not being able to find him and all the rest.
And it went on, and before we wrap, that searching for the pirate or the blockade runner, depending on who was calling it, that went on for how long?
Well, the thing is, we have to remember that Sims joined the Confederacy in Montgomery when the captain was there. And he then went down to New Orleans and refurbished this old ferry boat.
The Sumter, right?
U.S. CSS Sumter.
Yeah.
And he went out he escaped from New Orleans and barely, and then he went on that ship, I think sunk about 18 or 20 ships, Union ships with that one. And then he had to abandon that in Gibraltar. And then because of his success with the Sumter, then he got the command of the Alabama. So in terms of both ships, he was out there for about 3.5 years, I guess.
Wow. Wow, that's a pretty good track record.
Yeah, he spent a lot of time at sea. I think he got sick of it after a while. And also, of course, the circumstances of the sinking, where the ship was sunk out, off Cherbourg. And the question is, why did he go out there? Because he really was clearly not, his powder was compromised and all that stuff. Some people say it was just, once again, to his daring do, The guy was very, very aware of the fact that he was this kind of superstar by that time. So he went out to try to the battle of Kearsarge. He got whacked. But then, under naval tradition, he was supposed to, let's say, give your sword to the commander of the other ship and surrender yourself, and so forth. But he managed to escape. He got on this British yacht with a lot of his officers, and they took off to England. And this made Gideon Wells, the U.S. Navy Secretary, was furious about this. This violates every naval tradition, to escape after your ship has been surrendered or sunk. So, in fact, Sims was put in jail, in prison for 4 months after the Civil War was over, based on that incident.
Wow.
And they finally had to drop it because there really wasn't a legal case. It was just, it was a violation of naval tradition, but that's not, you can't imprison somebody for that, so. Anyway, there's a lot to this story that I'm not even bringing up because, Sims was a very dramatic guy, and I think he knew it. And he kind of went out of his way to make it even more dramatic. So he kind of told a good story in his own life. He was kind of an outrageous guy in many ways.
Well, it's good, good material.
It makes for a good character, right?
Yes, it does, and good material for Sink the Alabama, the upcoming film from Robert Clem. We'll put the links up, but I have them go to One State? You'd go to the One State Films?
I believe, it's there.
So y'all can see it there. As always, I appreciate our time together and hopefully get you back soon for an update on this film.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Robert, thank you.
All right. Sean, always good to be with you. Thanks very much.
Hey, thank you. Robert Clem, check it in. Sink the Alabama. Yeah, I'll put the link up here on my Twitter feed. You can check it out. Watch the trailer. Pretty good stuff here with a lot of the conversation around Raphael Sims here at Mobile. I think it's worth watching. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, you can check out the link for the trailer for Sink the Alabama. It's on our Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. Which I need to do, so that I gotta. Don't I think I have to calve off that Twitter feed that has been it's FM Talk 106.5, but it's really kind of travels around with me. I gotta come up with a new Twitter handle. Maybe we'll have some. I have some contesting what that Twitter feed should be called. But let me take that back. All right, coming right back. You catch the news here, update from Dr. Bill, and then back to you. Phone lines, text lines open at 343-0106.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Phone number, text line 343-0106, 343-0106. All right, two stories here. Let's do this one because it fits with the conversation we just had with Bob Clem, and talk about Admiral Sims and talking about Civil War history. See the AP had it, and I think Yellowhammer had a story about it. It's from the AP through AL.com. It says two Alabama state senators say they want to divert part of a statewide property tax tied to the legacy of the Confederacy to preserve and promote black history in the state. Okay, I think I like this so far. Alabama imposed a tax to fund pensions for Confederate soldiers and their widows, and it still collects it today. The only tax still directly tied to the Confederacy. Come on. Really? See, we always have people say, oh, the tax will sunset and will be gone at this. Yeah, here's one that's still being levied. So most of the revenue is used for other purposes, but 1% goes to preserve and operate the state's Confederate Memorial Park in rural Mountain Creek. The Chilton County site between Montgomery and Birmingham was the site of the home for indigent Confederate veterans and their widows. Senator Clyde Chambliss tells Montgomery Advertiser that he and Senator Bobby Singleton will sponsor a bill this year that will preserve funding for the park, but will require the state to spend an equal 1% on black history sites. Now, is that... how many percentages are there in this tax? Said it would be more than $500,000 a year for each purpose. The owner of $100,000. Here we go. Okay. The owner of a $100,000 house who utilizes Alabama's homestead exemption pays 10 cents a year for the park's upkeep. Did you know that? You know that? That your home, right? The home place there? The exempt, you pay 10 cents per year for the park's upkeep. This tax has been around since the Civil War. There's a whole other story here, by the way, on this. Chambliss says, it is imperative that we remember all of our history and learn from both good and bad. I will continue working with all that want to share my love of history to protect, enhance, and restore symbols that will help us avoid the mistakes of the past and move our state forward in a positive direction. End quote. Singleton, Greensboro Democrat, who is African-American, did not respond to requests for comment. I wonder why. Why wouldn't Bobby Singleton? Let's try to, don't we see if we get him on there. That would be great. Lawmakers in the past have tried unsuccessfully to remove the park's funding. Some places in Alabama and across the South have removed Confederate monuments in the last year. All right. But what about the... okay, it goes into a bunch of stuff about what else is going on, but... okay, here we go. The last Confederate veteran died at the home in 1934, leaving seven widows as residents. The state closed the home in 1939 instead of paying welfare to the five remaining widows. In 1964, lawmakers created the Confederate Memorial Park as a shrine to honor Alabama's citizens of the Confederacy. That's their quote. The park, run by the Alabama Historical Commission, came amid centennial observances of the Civil War, but also amid resistance for the civil rights movement by Alabama's segregationist government. All right, so this, the side story here to me is that there's still been this tax that's been levied that long on property in the state. We need to like, okay, no, hold on, y'all. Write a note here. All right. Tax. I gotta figure out how many, if that one's there, how many other taxes that are still embedded? They're like, well, let's just keep going with that. We'll allocate that somewhere else. All right, so that's one of the stories I want to get through. The other one is, hey, a story we have talked about many, many times, now back bubbling back to the top. Some sunshine, Dalton, on this. Homeowners, a story from our news partners at WKRG. Once again, I guess channeling a Kim Chandler Associated Press story, said homeowners and an environmental group are asking federal regulators to step in over Alabama Power's fees on home solar panels. Fees, they argue, purposely discourage the use of solar in the sun-rich state. Remember this story? How many times have we talked about this? Petition was filed with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that asserts that the Alabama Public Service Commission violated federal law when it upheld the fees. It asked the commission to initiate an enforcement action against the PSC and direct the state agency to order Alabama Power to sell electricity to solar customers at non-discriminatory rates. Keith Johnson, who's director of Southern Environmental Law Center in Alabama, said, by imposing one of the highest fees on solar customers of any regulated utility nationwide, Alabama Power's unjustified solar charges are severely curtailing renewable energy development in our state, and other states are leaving Alabama behind because of it. All right, there's a quote, end quote. He goes on to say, we're asking the FERC to exercise its authority to enforce federal protections for solar customers in Alabama Power's service territory. The action comes after the Alabama Public Service Commission last year upheld the fees and approved an increase. Remember, we talked about this then. Alabama Power charges, here you go, $5.41 per kilowatt fee, based on the capacity of a home system on people who use solar panels or other means to generate part of their own electricity. It amounts to $27 monthly fee on a typical 5-kilowatt system. Average solar panel setup for the home costs about $10,000, according to the Environmental Law Center. Fees add another $9,000 or so to over the 30-year lifespan of the system, dramatically increasing the homeowner's cost and reducing any financial benefit they see from solar. Alabama Power has maintained the fee is needed to maintain the infrastructure that will provide backup power to customers when the solar panels don't provide enough energy. Remember that? That was their thing. Remember last year we talked about this. They said, well, we got to have these fees because they may need power. Well, why don't you charge them for the power then? Just build out the infrastructure because you know you're going to move into it. We need no chance we're going to need less electricity. Alabama Power spokeswoman Allison Tucker said in an email, Alabama Power is focused on providing customers with safe, reliable, cost-effective energy. This issue was fully examined by the Alabama Public Service Commission, which included a lengthy public hearing, with the plaintiffs choosing not to pursue the case any further in state court. Customers with on-site generation who want backup service from the grid should pay the cost for that service. If not, other customers unfairly pay the cost for those individuals and businesses. But hey, in other states, they're selling back into the system. They're selling, and it's not anti-fossil fuel. Actually, I've got a guest, Dr. Sutter, coming on this week from Troy. We're going to talk about what fossil fuels mean for raising people out of poverty and what it's meant for the lifestyle here, what it could mean for other places on the planet. I'm for continuing with fossil fuels, but I'm a guy, I got solar panels. I'm into this stuff. I think it's very cool. But shouldn't it be a thing where they're working with the homeowner instead of against the homeowner to maybe if they got a little overage they're producing at the house, you could sell that back? And we'll dig into this week. This has come up, well, pretty much every year and is back. The fight against the fee to be on solar in the state of Alabama. So I think it's worth our time and discussion. It's because other states are doing things differently. They are welcoming this process, right? They're making it part of what they're doing, not working against it. All right, coming back in just a couple minutes here, Dr. Matthew B. Shad is going to join us. Always a great discussion with him. of what's brand new in the fight against cancer out there. Anybody who's heard me talk with him before, I love this man. And he joins us next right here on Midday Mobile.